Good morning, Matt Waldman. It's another Monday. That means another feel it or fuck it, and I'm feeling some fuckery is up today. I don't know. What about you? How you doing?
I'm always up for a good feel it or fuckery. Yeah, I would say that I'm doing good. We're putting the final touches on the tight end chapter. I have my last player I'm watching today for the RSP, 150 players. The 150th is Austin Stogner, the Oklahoma tight end, transfer from South Carolina. It'll be available April 1st, barring any kind of craziness. It's been that way since 2006. And you can get it at mattwaldman.com.
Jatavion Sanders, feel it or fuck it.
I'm kind of feeling him. Yeah, I'm feeling him. He's kind of an aspiring David Njoku. Kind of that, you know, he's that kind of David Njoku starter kit. Hopefully he has... you know, holds up a little better as a blocker and holds on to the ball a little bit more than Njoku did to begin his career.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. I asked, and this was a off the cuff question for you. I asked because I'm at a point in a draft where I'm going, this might be time. When is the time in a draft for you? A deep best ball draft. You're approaching your 20th round. Is he a flyer for you?
Sure, that wouldn't be bad. You know, as long as you're at the end of a deep draft like that, I think tight ends like that are more than enough. Because there's some pretty good ones in this class with some potential that in a year or two they could probably start emerging in the lineup. And Sanders has that athletic ability to do so.
Yeah, I feel like for me, just what I've been seeing at drafts, it just seems like the tight end falls off quickly. You reach a point where you're just kind of going, nah. And I'm taking chances on some of the same old guys I've taken chances on in the past. I will say, if you're out there listening, you know, if you're getting late into your draft, getting very deep into your draft, and you see a Jonnu Smith there, Mike McDaniel might figure out how to use that kind of talent in his offense. Yeah. Zach Ertz is going to be available way late. He's kind of a safety valve play for me late in drafts as well in Washington. We're going to talk about this. Let's get going in Washington and spin off the late round tight end talk, which I know is very popular. the late tight end.
Well, you Washington. Know, that whole Laporta thing got people going, I guess.
I really think it does. I mean, just in general, tight end is all, we go into every draft saying, well, if I don't get one of the good guys, I'll just stream. Well, you and 12 other guys in your league, depending on how big your league is, right, are going to, you know, probably 10 of them are going to be looking at the same kind of thing at some point. So, have a plan, people. Washington selecting second in the draft. Some talk this week of Dan Quinn saying, well, we're probably taking a quarterback. I'm thinking probably Marcus Mariota. Is he a viable starter if either as a bridge or longer if they somehow miss at a quarterback?
For coaches, yes. For fans, hell no. You know, it's
Hugo
offended Hugo's sensibilities. He's seen enough of these quarterbacks.
I feel like I'm in Hugo's camp on this one.
Yeah, and Hugo, I think Hugo's a Falcons fan, so he needed to give a little bit of a retort to that. But yeah, I mean, I think that Mariota will certainly be able to run the offense at least to some extent. It kind of tips off to you some of the players that they might be looking at, someone who's a little bit more mobile, you know, who can, you know, make all the throws, but, you know, at the same time, they probably see as a better version of Mariota, but might end up being like Mariota in kind of the slow end of the processor realm, and that's probably Drake May. That's who I think they think their best fit is. I think their best fit would probably be Michael Penix. They could probably get him around later in the second round where they spread the field with those receivers. He's going to throw a lot of those guys open. I think he's a little bit better in the pocket than Drake May in terms of maybe not toughness, but being able to maneuver it and find the open man. And we'll see how it works out here, but I mean, I think the best rookie fit isn't Drake May, but I don't think Drake May is the best rookie fit for any team that wants to take someone in the first round.
Right, and so, you know, are we looking at a possibility that maybe Washington sees that the same way as you do, and maybe they trade down and get a bunch of picks? And so let's rephrase this. Let's circle back to Michael Penix, because he seems to be like the super polarizing piece of this equation. Yeah. Feel it or fuck it. I know you feel it. I talked a little bit about this last night on the live stream. I mean, you know, people are either in or out on this guy. You're more in.
I'm more in. Yeah, I mean, because the stuff that people tend to be out on are always rumor-based stuff, and they tend to be rumor-based stuff about quarterbacks like Penix. You know, either he's not a hard worker, or he doesn't really play in a pro-style offense. You know, none of these guys really do that to that extent. Or there's always something that's always talked about with guys like Penix that gets them dropped down those rounds. I mean, Lamar Jackson, it was that way for sure too. I think from what I see with Penix, he's probably the best thrower, pure thrower, and he has more. I think he has more from the pocket in terms of toughness, movement, and more from seeing the field than people give him credit for. But that tends to be the case with a lot of quarterbacks. So, you know, for me, it's Caleb Williams and Michael Penix are the two top quarterbacks in his class, and Penix won't be seen that way. I don't think Washington will trade down to get their quarterback, because until, you know, I keep hearing Washington's a new and improved organization, but until I actually see them emerge from their dysfunctional decisions, let's wait for proof of that rather than buying the new spin or marketing job that they've done through the media, for the media to kind of, because the media is going to tell that story. But
they definitely like Adam Peters. The new GM is clearly highly thought of in the media, right? I mean, he gets nothing but positive reviews. Maybe that's because he's helpful or open to, you know, what I mean, helpful.
And
maybe
he may prove good. Yeah.
Right.
He may prove good, but yeah.
It's interesting. So we'll hear. And by the way, I mean, there's no worse month than April, because everything I hear is a fucking lie. You know, so when you hear teams saying, well, we're thinking about this, I mean, none of it's true, and you should know it's not true. And I mean, maybe, you know, and if it is true, they're just using it to confuse you. So take all these things with a grain of salt, like we're not going to draft, we're going to draft, we're thinking about this, we're looking at that. Yes, all those things, and 99% of everything you hear is going to not be true.
Yeah,
because it's not.
Yeah, and I would even go one step further, because we often make it sound, we often report this exact thing that you just said, and we make it sound like that they have this plan of confusing people, and that they were really smart in how they confuse, you know, how they're playing the media. When the reality is I bet you half these teams, from what I've seen in the past, half these teams, one, you know, the head saying one thing, which is usually the GM or someone related to personnel, and then the ass, the owner, is saying the other, or is going to do something else at the last minute. Because what ends up happening is that the David Teppers of the world, you know, guys who tend to be a little impetuous and maybe impatient with stuff, or at least, maybe I won't say David Tepper, say the Jimmy Haslams of the world, I'll own my own team. Yeah, will be the ones who there's months, or if not more than a year of work being done. They form their board, and then they go, well, you know, that Colin Cowherd, he said something compelling to me. That Stephen A. Smith, that Jason Whitlock, I heard this, and I'm scared now. If we don't get this guy,
we're gonna get railed.
We're gonna get railed, even though that guy was hung over and his receivers were hung over and couldn't and had to throw to accountants in a pro day practice. I'm talking to you, Haslam, and with Johnny Manziel. You know, what scout? What I mean, to me, you would always hear people say, what scout should have a job that attended that Johnny Manziel pro day and not had sirens going off? But then I would say, I bet you the scouts for the Cleveland Browns probably were like, there's no fucking way we can draft this guy with this shit show going on. And then Jimmy Haslam probably going, but we need to make a move with this guy. But we'll see. Because that's how I see it happening, is that more often than not, it's the big ass at the top of the ladder that's probably making the move.
So we talked about Washington, who picks number two. The Patriots picked third overall. They also have a need for a quarterback, kind of. They've got Jacoby Brissett. First of all, your thoughts on Jacoby Brissett. I think he's a competent guy. He's proven it time and time again. doesn't seem like he has the high end that the teams are looking for.
No, not at all. But I mean, they know that he's been able to handle difficult situations and at least put their team in positions to play winning football or competitive football. And that's really, as a bridge or a backup, that's what you want. And more so than anything, I think what Brissett offers is a professionalism and leadership behind the scenes in the locker room that teammates respect and coaches respect, and that can help a young player figure out the right way to work at the game. And I think that that's what New England probably wanted to bring to the table with him. And so, yeah, I mean, I think short term, he's good from that standpoint. They would have to have a monster team for him to compete in the playoffs. I mean, like one of the best teams of all time, probably, for him to compete well in the playoffs. But, you know, to keep them in a position where there's close games and have a chance to win, he's solid.
All right, so they're also in a position to draft quarterback. Jerry Mayo, speaking at the owners' meeting this week, basically said, you know, yes, we're keeping all our options open. And then there was a lot of talk about quarterbacks. Drake May was one of the ones that was most discussed. He had some comments on him. Who do you feel is the right fit, realizing Alex Van Pelt is the offensive coordinator there?
Yeah, I mean, I think most likely you're going to be looking at a player that they feel like has the prototypical size, arm, body type. They're gonna go for the player that hits all the resume bullet points because they're new and they're not that established as in New England at this point. So I would think that May is probably going to be one of those conversation pieces. I still think there's a possibility that the smokescreen could be, let's trade back a little bit and we could go for someone like Jaden Daniels. And I could see Daniels being going for the more athletic guy who can hang in the pocket and they spread the ball around.
Right, like almost thinking like New England taking a different route than the route they've been, right? Like just taking, like totally recircuiting their entire thing. And that's kind of how I felt about this. And again, Matt Waldman here, people, he writes the rookie scouting portfolio. He knows these things. I don't. I just get these like senses of things that, like, as you're sifting through the garbage out there, you get a feel. Just my sense is there's enough quarterbacks, and some of them are going to be, Penix would be one that comes to mind, but mostly because I've heard you talk about him a lot, that just isn't viewed the same by the NFL. Look, we see what happens when you're a quarterback in the NFL and the NFL doesn't view you the same as we do, or I do as a fantasy manager. Look, Justin Fields would be a prime example of that, right? So do you think that's like a viable strategy here is waiting a little bit? And I mean, you're still going to, like, as some of these quarterbacks rise, J.J. McCarthy, you hear a lot of buzz about, and others. Is that really the wise course of action? You're the GM, Matt Waldman, GM. Are you waiting? Are you, assembling draft capital and then going to shoot that firepower at a later quarterback?
Yeah, I would. I mean, like, if I'm GM and I'm starting up and knowing that I could go back and just do the RSP once I get fired, if things don't go according to what they want, I'm waiting. I'm building a good team, because I'd rather them fire my ass and then point later to the fact that they have a hell of an offensive line, hell of a defensive line, and then they could and some good receivers or a good running game, and oh yeah, none of those quarterbacks that you had that you picked, worked out after you fired me, but your team is in a playoff window, so now you can acquire the free agent, that comes available, who's going to be able to guide your team. But I think that's the deal, is that, to me, if I knew that Michael Penix is going to be available in round two or round three, I'm definitely trading back to get that,
Like, even if you're not in love with the player, you might be in love with the price. I feel like that's a fantasy take, people. Like, that's, how I approach my fantasy drafts is, like, I like this guy, but man, that guy's going to be there two rounds later, and I like him almost as much, and I'm getting a much better price, and yeah, I can hammer a different position or a higher value piece or a more, a piece in a position of scarcity rather than this one.
J.J. McCarthy may have a high ceiling to some people because he's got nice footwork and he seems really athletic. But really, at the end of the day, if he doesn't have a good pass pro, if he doesn't have receivers who can read the field well and are reliable and can maybe erase some of the inaccuracies that he has with their catch radius, it really doesn't matter. You know, I would rather have Penix, who's less athletic at this point with some of the injuries he's had, who's more accurate, and knowing that I've actually gotten him receivers who aren't, you know, guys you could have gotten at Big Lots. And I feel like that the Patriots have been the Big Lots of player acquisition, especially skill position players at wide receiver, for so many years, that it would be nice for them to actually give their quarterback weapons and give them a, you know, and obviously have a decent offensive coordinator, which it looks like that they do. So we'll see how that goes.
All right, fair enough. All that sounds good. Let's get to some tabletop issues here in some of these cities where there are quarterbacks already on hand. And you know, just the coded language being spoke tells you that there are things going on. Antonio Pierce says that Aiden O'Connell deserves a chance in Vegas at the starting job. They signed Gardner Minshew. Feeling a fucking Gardner Minshew beating out Aiden O'Connell.
I'm feeling that eventually. I mean, Aiden O'Connell has some physical talent as a thrower. He's certainly fearless of being able to fit it into tight windows. I still think that what he did last year hasn't really proven that he is going to be a good long-term starter in the league, and still has some things to work on in terms of how he sees the field and where and what he can and can't do in the pocket. But it's a nice contrast because we know Gardner Minshew can move around in the pocket. He just doesn't have O'Connell's arm. So what they're doing right now is saying that that was a media-related coach patting his young player on the head and saying, we have confidence that you can win this job. And it's not like Gardner Minshew we look at as being a world beater. So, you know, it's one, most likely what they're looking at here is that they want to give O'Connell the chance because they're high on him in the room, but they know if they can't, that Gardner Minshew is probably the best backup in the league who can give them, make them competitive for a potential playoff run, at least, you know, without embarrassing them and not having a quarterback if O'Connell fails. I still think if they did Minshew and O'Connell, it means they don't have a starting quarterback right now.
And they could still draft one.
And they're probably going to draft somebody that they think can develop, yeah.
Right, maybe they don't want to use that. What are they, 10, what, 11?
Yeah, they probably don't want to use that.
Yeah, they probably do a trade there and let somebody else move up and they could spend a little later. I totally agree with that. And but also, you know, Antonio Pierce, one of the reasons he's still around is the locker room loved him. One of the reasons the locker room loves you is because you support the players in the building and you say the right things about them publicly and give them the opportunities that maybe they've earned, even if they, you know, and giving someone an opportunity is not giving them a job, right? So, I mean, and I think that's where, you know, we hear sometimes these, you know, I call it coded language, but I mean, you hear these things, you have to pay attention to what's being said. I'm paying attention in Seattle, where Geno Smith got a new deal, but it's not like to kind of lock him in as your quarterback of the future money. They traded for Sam Howell. I thought this was maybe a place where we would see Michael Penix. Ryan Grubb comes on there as the offensive coordinator, right? So I thought this might be an ideal place for him to compete. I think the Howell acquisition kind of throws a little cold water on that, but let's say it is Geno Smith versus Sam Howell, and it's a legitimate competition, although the Seahawks would tell you it's not. Geno goes in as the starter. Can Howell push Geno Smith for the starting job?
Yes, only because that when Geno's hot, he's way better. When Geno's not, Sam Howell's hot is enough to get a team to feel like there can be a compelling competition. When everybody's playing their best, Geno Smith wins this in a cakewalk. But that hasn't always been the case, and pressure can be part of that issue. But at the same time, you know, Smith will be perceived as shakier against pressure, even though I think he's better at moving around and finding open men than people say. And they will say that Howell is a tough quarterback who handles pressure well because he's brave and willing to throw into it, which really, if you switched if you switch jerseys and just put like, you know, and just hit everything about these players, you would probably have the same things to say about both of them. It's just that one's perceived differently than the other.
Right. I think, you know, we're going to talk a lot about the legs. We're going to talk about another one here in a second. But, like, I'll just throw it out there. Russell Wilson. So the initial reporting was Russell Wilson has the starting job. I never heard those words, though. That was the reporting. I've now heard the words Russell Wilson is in the pole position from Mike Tomlin, which means that Justin Fields will compete for the job. Every fucking thing should be a competition, unless you're Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts. I mean, there's a handful of guys that don't require competition. But in a situation like this, telling me it's not a competition is telling me you don't care and everyone should care about this from the team level. So Russell Wilson in the pole position, Justin Fields pushing from behind. We've talked about it a little bit before. Does this new information give you any change of opinion here?
No, not at all, because really this is how it should be, is that Russell Wilson is one play away from being a two-time Super Bowl winning quarterback. So they're giving him his props for the record of his career and saying, you're the established veteran. We want you to be the main guy, and we're going to give you every chance to prove that you're that guy. By giving that thing. But yes,
better prove it.
But you're going to have to prove it. Right. You're going to have to rebound. You know what you did the past 2 years in Denver, Russ. Let's go to work. And I think that Justin Fields, they're basically saying, look, we're going to give you some time to where if you don't win this competition right away, it doesn't mean we're jettisoning you. You're facing a quality NFL quarterback, no matter what people have to say about Wilson's recent performances. His history says that. So yeah, everyone should be competing for a job, but we see too often a lot of these guys aren't the politics of, well, the owners, you know, we've already paid this much draft capital, we've got to look good with the draft capital we did. Well, they got both these guys relatively cheap, so as a result of that, they don't have to play that draft capital politics game of making any GM or president look good. They can just see how it shakes out.
Look, I mean, go back no further than Russell Wilson's rise to the starting role in Seattle, where they just paid Matt Flynn a shit ton of money, and you can see the language shift there. I remember it well. Pete Carroll, you know, going from, you know, Matt Flynn is our starter to it's a competition. It's always a competition. And then pretty soon it was Matt who. So, you know, like, we'll see what happens in all these situations. These are ones bear watching. I think Daniel Jones is another one that bears watching. Financially, they're on the hook. They're saying he will be the starter. They bring in Drew Lock. I'm hearing rumors that they're still interested in drafting somebody. Would it be as high as 6?
Well, I mean, if it's the Giants, the answer is probably yes, based on their track record with or without Dave Gettleman. I feel like Giants fans, and I'm sorry I'm going to make fun of you guys, but you know, I mean, because there's plenty to make fun of with this team that I'm wearing on my forehead here. But you know, as one fan of a team that's got a clownish element to another, I'll just say that the Giants seem to be that team, and I see it from the reaction of the fans. The fans cultivate this "we're smart football fans, we're savvy football fans" kind of feel, you know. And it's usually about the late round picks and the UDFAs and the kind of the nitty gritty of inside football kind of stuff. But it's always like the early picks where you scratch your head with those guys. Maybe not always, but there's always like one big ass blunder. And I could see how the Giants are that wizened old school blue blood organization that, you know, we're gonna take some of their bad decisions too seriously. And Daniel Jones was one of those guys for sure.
Paying him definitely was. I mean, whether you think drafting him was or wasn't, you know, something you could recover from, obviously.
They should have paid Saquon Barkley, if you ask me. Let Daniel Jones go off the side of the road and pick a cheaper quarterback now that would have been available in the second or third round.
They may regret that whole Saquon Barkley thing a couple times a year.
I am rooting for Saquon Barkley something fierce when Tiki Barber, who just, I mean, great, great running back at the end of his career. At the end of his career, he was great. Runs his mouth way too much. And, you know, as we're running.
What about Schlereth versus Judy? While you brought that up.
I haven't seen, but what did Schlereth, this is how you be a man, say to Judy, who's going off on Steve Smith?
I mean, basically Schlereth just said, look, man, you know, congratulations on getting your money, but show us something. It's time, right? Like, you haven't shown us anything yet. And Judy took umbrage at it, and Schlereth reminded him, well, some of us have won championships and done things in this league that, you know, he called them old heads, you know, and said, some of us old heads have done some things in this league, and we're just telling you what we observe. And Judy did not like the criticism, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm sure he didn't, you know, but Judy probably needs to be, you know, it's tough, but he's got to be thicker skinned about where he is. And, you know, wide receivers can be a little diva-esque about things. We've noticed that with them. They're a little quick twitch, high twitch in terms of their nerves a little bit. I've had Calvin Ridley pop off at me because I talked about him dropping the football on video, and because he made a nice catch and scored a touchdown later on in that day, he made a comment, and I'm like, well, you know, good luck to you. Marquise Lee did the same thing when I talked about his inability to make transitions, and was like, I'm going to save this and prove to you that I'm like, good, you know, good luck to you. But if you need to deal with me, who's a nobody in this space compared to what you're doing, and maybe that's the problem, is that you need to focus more on your game and less on what people think of you. And I think that maybe that's where.
Johnson?
What's that?
Have we heard anything from Quentin Johnston?
I haven't heard anything from Quentin Johnston yet. I'm hoping.
The clap.
Yeah, I'm hoping he can get rid of the clap. Maybe he can get a shot for that. I don't know.
All right, let's move on to and Daniel Jones. I think, you know, probably the Giants are saying all the right things, and I feel like if he is not the starter by the middle of the year, I will not be surprised. And we'll see. He's coming off injury as well, so there's something there. Dak Prescott, they have not reworked his contract. I know Rich Eisen had a little theory that they're not reworking it because this is the year that maybe they think about pulling the Band-Aid off if they don't get further into the playoffs. Jerry Jones is getting very old. They'd still be in line for like a $40 million cap hit next year, but, you know, if they were to move on. But, like, you know, what do you think about the situation of them not reworking? They did take $4 million off, right? So he goes from, what, $59 million to $55 million. It's totally tying their hands, or has tied their hands, in free agency. It's causing them problems. How do we feel about that contract not being reworked?
I mean, at this point, I feel okay about it because I'm not, you know, the perception is that Dak's going to be the problem if they don't get any further, because the quarterback's supposed to lead them to the Super Bowl, right?
And I don't know that that's true.
It isn't true, but that's the perception, and it's going to be the perception. The fans are going to perceive it that way. Teams feel that way, especially, you know, owners tend to feel that way. So they're going to give Trey Lance a try if Dak doesn't work out. And that's part of it too, is there's probably pressure for, like, there's probably going to be a little bit of pressure of like, well, if Dak can't get it done, let's start over and let Trey Lance be the building block, because they probably liked him enough pre-draft, or draft somebody else and let Lance be that backup who can continue to develop or compete with it. So they might look at it and say, it's time, we're getting a little bit old in the trenches, we're getting a little bit old at other, you know, we've got guys in their prime, but they're probably going to leave at this point. So yeah, I mean, the foundation's crumbling a little bit from the, in terms of,
I'm
pressure.
Pissed that I didn't fucking frame it better. It should have been a Trey Lance conversation.
Nah, I mean not yet, but that's what's in the back of people's minds.
People are thinking, obviously, and, you know, and so just being in the situation, Jerry Jones being very impatient. I'll tell you this, if you're very old and impatient, and I know a little something about that, probably moving away from the best one of the top, you know, a top 10 quarterback to plunge into the unknown is probably not the best course of action. I'm just going to suggest that kindly.
I would suggest that too, but I would also say that probably partying with Charles McDonald of Yahoo all night is probably not the best decision either. But
come on, I think that's a great time.
It could be a great time, but it might not be the best thing, you know. At least
Charles short.
Yeah. Charles is probably a great hang, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if, you know, I'm not sure if that's always, but then again, Charles might be the one who might have reported that, might have been the one that's like, yeah, maybe it's maybe hanging with Jerry's not the best decision for a young guy, you know, so that might be
that's more in line. Gus Edwards, I keep seeing him. He's not risen high in the best ball rooms that I'm seeing. He's still like a running back four. Are people overlooking his history with Greg Roman, his history of production, and the direction this offense seems to be taking now that there's no Keenan Allen and Mike Williams around?
Yeah, I think that's a good deal. I mean, they're going to be drafting somebody else, I'm sure. But
I am too.
Jim Harbaugh and Gus Edwards, I mean, I feel like Bo Schembechler's ghost has like emerged in Charger land. I mean,
we have, by the way, a 4-year sample size with Greg Roman calling plays and Gus Edwards as his running back. Yeah. And the results were relatively good with Gus Edwards averaging over 5 yards a carry. And by the way, Gus for his career is at like 4.91. It wasn't the last year that he kind of dipped below five.
And if you believe this running back class isn't that good, then you're going to believe that they're going to go, well, we're going to give Isaiah Spiller one more chance to compete with Gus Edwards. Honestly, I think what's going to happen is Gus Edwards and his I'll credit Chad Ryder of this one saying Braylon Allen would be a nice fit there. And I could see a Gus Edwards Braylon Allen committee situation there, or a Gus Edwards Jalen Wright committee if you want to go the opposite end and go for the super fast back and have that thunder and lightning kind of committee situation. So yeah, Edwards is going to figure prominently.
Yeah, Edwards, 13 touchdowns last year, people. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
There's not a lot going on in Los Angeles right now. Okay, let's get into some of the rookies. I'm told you know about these things. I'm told that by me because I read the rookie scouting portfolio every damn year since there's been a rookie scouting portfolio. So I want one quickie at each position, off the radar or under or off the radar, rookies we should know, names we need to know at quarterback.
Okay, so I'm going to say I'm going to go with Jordan Travis. There's two that I really like.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah, Jordan Travis is at FSU. He's a 6'1", 200-pound guy, promising vertical game. Certainly has a playmaker's confidence in letting his top options win the football. I mean, Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman, he did a good job with getting them in position to win the ball, putting it in windows where only they could make the play, and even if they were tough plays. When he's healthy, and I think once he gets acclimated to an NFL offense, I think he's got that ability to emerge as maybe a top-flight NFL reserve journeyman starter, kind of in that Gardner Minshew mold, a little more mobile, maybe a little bit better arm, maybe even a Jeff Blake type or a Jeff Garcia type where he can kind of a mix of those two guys. He's got Jeff Blake's kind of arm talent to throw the deep ball, but maybe a little bit more of that Jeff Garcia-esque skill is something that he could develop a little bit further.
I like that. I'm right. And by the way, when I say I haven't heard of these guys, I have guys on my dynasty rosters who I have not heard of at this time at various points. So this is why you have Matt Waldman as next to you as many times as you can. A running back who I need to know.
We're going to say Kamani Vidal. Okay, Kamani Vidal out of Troy. He's 5'8", 213 pounds, ran a 4.46 40. That'll get some people excited. 37.5 vertical leap. That'll get some people excited. Let's say that, you know, I've been critical of DeAndre Swift. He's a good football player, okay? There's no question about that. But he's also a scheme-based player who isn't going to give you everything between the tackles. He's more of a guy you want to get out in space, and you're going to simulate runs in open space with him. But the way people perceive DeAndre Swift is as an every down back based on the production that he's gotten and that he can do it all and that he does it all at a high level and he's a borderline elite back. Well, Kamani Vidal to me is essentially what people see when they look at DeAndre Swift but are wrong about it. But he's at a smaller school that nobody really talks about. And will probably have a low draft capital and will have to prove more of what he can do. But he's that guy that is probably in that DeAndre's, like if Ahmad Bradshaw, if you remember Ahmad Bradshaw,
I do.
Who could have been a really good starter if he could hold up. And I would say the top of that chain probably is Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, if Maurice Jones-Drew's like Bergen County, New Jersey in terms of real estate, you know, Ahmad Bradshaw is probably like a nice place in Atlanta. and DeAndre Swift is probably like the mid-rent place. I'd say Vidal somewhere between Ahmad Bradshaw and DeAndre Swift.
All right, give me the wide receiver who fits this bill.
Oh, the wide receiver who fits this bill. All right, let's see here. I'm rolling with Anaya Smith. Look, he's gonna drop in the draft because he got busted, pulled over by police and charged with marijuana possession, unregistered firearm, and driving while intoxicated. He got that triple right there. The marijuana I'm not so worried about. The gun thing was just kind of stupid in terms of like not having it registered, you know, a licensed firearm. That was stupid. The driving while intoxicated was pretty shitty. So, well, that's just from the judgment end that everybody likes to exhibit. I'll prostrate myself to the judgment people about all this. As a scout, just watching football, if he clears all that, and it looks like he has, obviously, he is a excellent route runner for a guy who came into the league came into college football as a running back, and a pretty good running back with big play ability. He is one of the best runners after the catch in this class. He is one of the smoothest route runners in this class, and he is one of the most consistent pass catchers in terms of technique that I've seen in this class. I think if he's figured out his off-field stuff and gotten mature, and has shown that, and teams aren't as worried about him, they're going to get him at a discount, and he is going to be one of the most consistent receivers from this class.
Interesting. Tight end.
Let's see. Tight end. I'm going with Ben Sinnott. I don't know if he's an underrated guy.
I've heard of him, so.
Yeah, probably not. But, his 4.68 40 was impressive. And then the 6.83 cone drill. I think he's one of the top 3 to 5 tight ends in this class. And he's a bulldozer in terms of how he runs, but he can get his feet up. So to have a strong, rugged player with balance and contact balance and can move his feet the way he does, and he's reliable in the receiving game too. If not him, we'll just add Jack Westover. I'll just say walk on from Washington, 6'3", 243. Watched him last night, and he catches just about everything and makes really hard plays. But he's probably only more of a zone guy or a fullback. So he's one of those guys that you're probably going to want to go for Ben as a, from that standpoint.
You didn't write these down, people. Rewind and write them down. So one more rookie thing here real quick. I know people, we get excited when we see things get connected that we feel like should be connected. And it's on Mike McDaniel and Xavier Worthy's pro day and the ensuing excitement. What kind of fit is Xavier Worthy in Miami?
He's a great fit. I mean, he would, if you're looking for him as the future, as the present, I don't know, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill. You could probably put Xavier Worthy in the slot right now or put Tyreek in the slot and keep him there, or put Jalen in the slot and keep him there. It'll work. It'll work great because Worthy's kind of an Isaac Bruce, Deshaun Jackson type of player in terms of what his potential could be. And when you think from that standpoint, that means that he runs pretty good routes. He makes tough plays. He's not just a gadget guy, but you can start him as a gadget guy if you want, and then develop him outward from there. And then when Tyreek Hill, who, let's remember, he ain't as young as he used to be.
He is not. And he's talked about he's talked about when he will retire. I mean, it could be the end of next year or something. Yeah. He's put a cap on it, so he's thinking about it, whether he's ready to go or not.
Yeah, who else would you rather have Xavier Worthy learn from, as explosive as he is, than Tyreek Hill on how to use your speed well as a receiver, as a route runner, and after the catch, and in an offense? You want a guy like, to me, this is smart, because if I'm a decision maker, I want a guy in my locker room who can say to Xavier Worthy, look, I'm as fast as you are, if not faster than you are, and I'm telling you, you can't just lean on your speed all the time. You're going to have to get better at this stuff. Who better to tell him that than fucking Tyreek Hill. I'm totally feeling that.
Part of this is like, you know, I feel like from a fan, as a fantasy investor, you kind of view Mike McDaniel as a magical creature who has this offense that yields tremendous things that we love, or puts our players in great position to do the things that they do, like take advantage of their speed and make plays.
That C. Green is kind of close to, you know, Irish leprechaun kind of stuff. And McDaniel, I mean, he's got, you know, he's got some Irish roots in him. So maybe, you know, maybe there is a little something magical in that. I don't know.
If I wore long pants, I would roll up to my mid ankle and emulate the great Mike McDaniel.
We can call you Patty, do Patty jokes, you know.
My middle name is Patrick, so there's that.
That could work, you know.
All right. Let's go. A couple closing items. Zach Wilson, Joe Douglas talking about it this very morning, that they're looking for trade partners. And, you know, if Justin Fields was more conditional to day three pick, not sure what you're expecting back for Zach Wilson, but also suggested it's possible he remains with the Jets. At this point, is there any, can we see redemption here? I mean, we see quarterbacks kind of get tossed in the ash heap and then rise up Phoenix-like. And, Baker Mayfield, I think, is kind of an example of that. There are others probably who have shown possibility. Is that within the range of possible outcomes for Zach Wilson?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's totally in the range. If he can sit for a few years and really work at his craft, and he is able to be accountable for what he's contributed to the scenario, maturity can do wonders. If he's not, and I don't know if he isn't mature or not, but if he's not, and he could be one of those guys that's out of the league within a couple of years. So he's at a crossroads right now, but it's certainly possible. He had enough ability to be a low-end starter in this league from my perspective pre-draft. And post-draft, I mean, after watching him, he certainly makes a lot of mistakes, and there's certain things that he was doing that he was still, you know, in New York, that he was doing at BYU that weren't good, that people overlooked. So if he can fix those things, he's got the skills. That's the baseline skills are there.
All right. So last thing here, the rule was approved as we were heading on to record this. The hip drop tackle has been banned in the NFL. How do we feel about these moves to improve player safety? I know the NFLPA was against this rule. They represent like half of their constituency as defensive players. I mean, you know, they've got to walk a line. How do you feel about a rule change like this? And also, what does the enforcement of it do to the game?
I would probably say that, hold on for just a quick second.
I've
got a rule here that needs to be enforced.
Hugo taking a stern lecturing at the moment. I can't witness it, but I hear the tail wagging, so it's all good.
Yeah, it's good. He just decided that it was time to, for the first time in years, to like mess with a saxophone case, and he was about to bite through a handle. And he's about to try it again. So, and that's a big no.
Are you gonna use the hip drop tackle on him?
No, probably not. But I am thinking maybe, I don't know, maybe a front face chancery might be something we'll do. Probably at, you know, 5% strength, but he's getting a little antsy because we've had electricians in the house today, and he's in the room with me, even though he's been friendly with him. So he's a little bored. And the other things won't do. But that said, yeah, hip drop tackle, look, I honestly play, you know, the fact that the NFLPA isn't handling that is a sign to me that I'm probably against the idea of going after that rule. But at the same time, the NFL's been pretty wise about how it's handled rule changes for the safety of the game, regardless of how some old heads will, you know, complain about stuff and say it's not the same league. It's still an exciting league. It's still a physical game. It's not changing to that level. So if they really feel that that's an issue, I'm okay with it.
I'm okay with taking, you know, like NFL's gone from being a contact sport to a collision sport. And if some of the techniques that lead to injuries, like they're basically leading to injuries of players I'm investing in as a fantasy manager. Last year, Mark Andrews was the big, you know, the poster boy for this thing. And so, like, I do think, though, I am torn a little bit because I think sometimes these rules are over-enforced or hard to enforce. especially the bang bang plays. But the hip drop is different. It's like the horse collar. I think you can, you know, you can coach that in. Like this is not the technique we use. So I'm not totally against it. And I'm an old head. So I'm here for the safety. They're doing a bunch of things for safety. Everyone now in practices is going to wear Guardian helmets. The last year it was a little position specific. This year they're all going to do it. Concussions were way down. So they're at least making some efforts to keep people on the field. And last year there was evidence that it actually helped. I think the number is there were 700 fewer missed player games in 2023 than 2022. And they feel like the primary driver was the 4-year low in the number of lower extremity strains, but also the concussions were down a fair amount. So
that's great news. That's great news for the league. And they need that news after years and years of ignoring it, sweeping it under the rug. So good for them that things are happening and they're going to continue to take precautions that they should.
And we know you old heads are out there going, let them play. Well, they're letting them play. They're still going to play the game.
You're still watching. If it's unwatchable and you're leaving, fine. But your fear of everything's going to, you know, everyone's afraid that, like, we're all going to, that the sky's falling all the time. And I think our media, I think the way we watch media perpetuates that all the time because we're not designed as human beings to be observing everybody's thoughts and fears analyzations, like, for as many hours in a day that we do. And I think that you need to unplug a little bit. That's all I would say.
And you know I never do. So I think this is advice to
you. Also, but you ask good questions.
But I think that, you know, here's the thing, people. And this is old head speaking. Change is the worst thing ever right up until you make it.
Yep.
And you go, oh, what the fuck was I waiting for? Right? So get on board, embrace the change, figure it out, sort it out, keep players on the field. I'm all about that. I'm all about being back next week, Matt Waldman, as we get even closer. RSP Day is when?
Next Monday.
Next Monday. Are we doing a show next Monday?
I think we are.
All right.
We might as well. Like a
joyous celebration. You'll be done.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, I might be drunk. We'll see. Probably not.
We'll be back for RSP Day this very next week. In the meanwhile, go to mattwaldman.com and get your order in so you get yours that very day, and we can sit here and discuss it. I'm Bob Harris. He's Matt Waldman. Over and out. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.